Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, welcome to episode number 276, to be exact, of a practical show done by a practical everyday guy like me. This episode this week's going to be about power and responsibility. I've been wanting to do this for a while. I had those last couple of interviews with John Hadaway set up, so I wanted to get those out to you. But I want to talk about power versus responsibility, specifically the power that you possess when you carry a gun and the responsibility that goes along with it. Now, I'm not going to harp on training. I'm just going to talk about responsibility. There is a huge responsibility. And I hear all kinds of things. I hear people say to me, Bob, you know, we shouldn't force people to get training. Okay? That's true. The government should not force people. And then in the same sentence or the next sentence, those same people say, but people should be responsible enough to do the right thing. Well, we all know that people are not always responsible enough, but we can't really do anything about that. At least, you know, legislatively we can't. So that's one of the reasons why I decided to dedicate this show to a lot of responsibility. And I want to address that. Now, there's two articles that I'll put in the show notes where I'm getting my information from. I found a real good article on Guns and Patriots blog. And it's called Carrying a Gun Responsibly Isn't Simple. Bruce Elmer wrote it. This was several years ago, actually back in 2011, but I thought it was pretty good, and I do a lot of reading. A lot of times I like to read articles that were written a while back just to get people's perspective on things. The Internet's such a great source of information, isn't it? So let's jump right into it. You know, what really is responsibility? Now, you know, during those Spider-Man movies, right, if you saw Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Man's uncle said, well, you know, you now have great power, and with great power comes great responsibility. Well, that was only part of it. You know, in the Safety Solutions podcast, when Paul Carlson interviewed Masoud Ayoub, they finished up one of their episodes. It was a great interview with Masoud Ayoub, and they finished up talking about this subject, power and responsibility. And, you know, Mass said the same thing. In fact, I got that from Mass. He said, you know, they didn't get it quite 100% right in Spider-Man. There's a whole lot more to it. So let me take my stab here at the difference between power and responsibility, or how they go together. First, let's start with a couple of cliches. You've probably heard these because I've actually said them. And I kind of wish I haven't said them. In the past, you know, you hear some things in the gun community. Like, here's one. An armed society is a polite society. That one's really overused. And you know what? I actually wish it said a whole lot more than that. I think that's incomplete. An armed society is a polite society. I think that's incomplete. A responsibly armed society is a polite society. Let me tell you what, folks. There's a lot of irresponsible people with a gun that are not very polite. Would you agree with me on that? I'll say that again. There are a lot of irresponsible people with a gun that aren't very polite. And some of these irresponsible people, you put them in a situation of stress, and they might not be very polite at all. As a matter of fact, they might be downright deadly. Think about it. So there's more to it. A responsibly armed society is a polite society. I think that should have been added in there. Here's another cliche I hate. I've covered this before, but I'll say it again. Better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Well, you know, if you've been to Mag 40 or anybody else that teaches the legalities and the aftermath of having to shoot somebody if you're carrying a gun, you probably know that the being judged by 12 is not so good either. Yeah, we don't want to be carried by 6, but sometimes being judged by 12, if things aren't going your way, if you didn't handle the whole situation properly, and if you weren't prepared for the aftermath and the legalities and everything after having to use your gun, sometimes being judged by those 12 jurors might not work out so well for you. And yeah, it might be better than being carried by 6, but people overuse that cliche. They make it sound like, oh, well, you know, those 12 people, once they hear my case, they're going to understand it, and they're just going to let me off scot-free, and I'm going to be fine, and I'm just going to walk back home to my family or drive back home to my family and forget about it in 2 weeks. Right? Isn't that, that's kind of how people make it sound. You and I probably know better, don't we? Here's another one, and I've said this before. A gun should be comforting, not comfortable. Well, true. I have to say it's very comforting to have my Glock 19. But if my Glock 19 is too big for the mission I'm on that day, and when I say mission, I mean most of you know I'm a business guy, and sometimes my wardrobe or the place I'm going to does not allow me to be able to carry my Glock 19 and for it not to be detected. And so, even though it might be comforting, it might not be very comfortable, and then therefore, I may not carry it. So I don't see anything wrong sometimes with downsizing. I'm not talking about your primary carry, but I'm talking about in those situations where you're in an NPE, a non-permissive environment. Sometimes that comforting Glock 19 or that comforting full-size 1911 or that comforting M&P 45 might not be so comfortable or might not make you feel very comfortable in the environment that you're going into. That's why I say when carrying a handgun responsibly, it might not be a bad idea to think about having more than one gun. You hear this cliche a lot. Don't draw your gun unless you're going to or intend to use it. True. True. And again, learn the citizen's rules of engagement. Okay? Because see, here's what a cliche is. A cliche is really a generalization. And reality is not always as simple as the cliches are. And, you know, things like, well, don't draw a gun unless you're going to intend or intend to use it. Well, you might have drawn it and you intended to use it. And then maybe the situation changed quickly, and you realize you didn't have to fire a shot. Wouldn't that be great, huh? But you intended, you drew the gun with the intent to use it, but things changed. Because you see, an armed encounter, a fight, changes and changes very rapidly. It's never the same. And it never goes according to plan. Reality is very seldom simple if you carry a gun, folks. And it could be hazardous to your health and your freedom to be real simple-minded or stupid about carrying a gun. Think about that. Now, we all have our moments. I've had my moments where I'm pretty simple and simple-minded and sometimes stupid and just have a brain fart. That happens. But, you know, I've heard people say this before, that guns are kind of like emergency equipment, like fire extinguishers. You know, it's an emergency rescue tool. If you really need one, you need it now. You need it badly because it's a life-threatening emergency, just like a fire. And I've heard it said and even said that carrying a defensive handgun is like a form of insurance. You know, it's kind of like a life insurance policy. But that's kind of oversimplifying it too. Because, as we know, you're going to be going to court. You're going to be enlisting the help of Texas Law Shield or Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. You're going to be enlisting the help of a very good qualified lawyer. One that you probably never thought you were going to have to call upon, now all of a sudden you're going to have to do that. So it's, yeah, it is a form of an insurance policy, but it's an insurance policy that involves a whole lot more than just paying a premium every month. Now, I want to repeat this even though I've said it before. It's very, very important that you understand that having a license to carry a gun doesn't deputize you. It doesn't make you a cop. All right. It is important for you to know something about the law, and that's why in most states you have to learn a little bit about the laws of self-defense. But when you carry that great power of deadly force on you, it's a little bit different degree of responsibility than a cop that's sworn to preserve and protect. Okay, what I'm talking about here is the responsibility to stay away from trouble as best as you can. And this is not taught enough. This is simply not taught enough, and I have to admit that even in some of the classes that I teach, the classes that I teach for Suarez International and the classes that I teach independently with Ben Branham, the one I'm going to be teaching with John Hadaway and Ben up in Arkansas, that Ben and I are going to be teaching in August with Glenn Tate up in the Seattle area. We're going to teach a lot about how to defend yourself with a gun, but we're not going to spend a whole lot of time about staying away from trouble. We'll cover some of that. But we're not going to talk about de-escalation and how to avoid instigating it and how to avoid some of the social conflicts that can turn bad on you real quick. I would suggest that you learn some of that. Now, for the short time that I was taking Krav Maga, which I had to put on hold because of my cancer treatments, but I'll start it again once I'm cured from this cancer, and I use the word cured because that's my attitude. In Krav Maga, they do, at least this school that I go to, they were teaching some really good ideas about how to avoid some of the bad conflicts. One thing to always remember is don't go stupid places with stupid people and do stupid things at stupid times. You know, I mean, that's just a great philosophy right there. And even though that's a cliche, that's one that I think is, that's a lot of good responsibility right there. But my earlier comments, sworn police officers are mandated to employ necessary force to fulfill their duties. In most cases. Not always, but in many cases they're mandated. But a private citizen, you're limited, folks. Okay? You're limited. And, you know, you have to have that ability and that opportunity in jeopardy that's so often talked about. And you have to be sure that you can articulate beyond the shadow of a doubt that your limits were pushed to the fact where, or pushed past the fact that de-escalation was not going to work. You had to use force. And in some states, by the way, you can't even use more force than your opponent. How stupid is that? Where I live here in South Texas, that's not the case. But in some states, you cannot use more force than the person trying to attack you. Bad. That's just bad stuff. So here's a few things I want to share with you. We all have our moments where we're just going to kind of have brain fades. And a few things that I want to talk about. When we carry a gun, we need to keep a low profile. We need to try to avoid social conflicts as much as possible. And if a social conflict finds you, I say it all the time. A lot of us don't go out looking for trouble, but sometimes trouble finds you. And if it finds you and you're carrying, it's wise to avoid saying or doing anything that might be construed as escalating the conflict. I'll give you an example. Recently, very recently, I was getting on State Highway 1604, just not very far from where I live here in San Antonio. And as I'm entering the freeway, you know, there's a service road, there's a two-lane service road to enter the freeway, and I have to get into the left lane to enter the freeway. Well, there was a guy in my left, and when I checked my blind spot, there he was, and I flipped my signal on to signal that I wanted to get over in that lane and get on the freeway. Well, he's one of those characters that didn't want to let me do that. He decided it was more prudent to speed up, roll his window down, flip me the bird, and pass me up on my left and make me either slow down. Well, he did. He made me slow down, so I had to get behind him to move onto the freeway. And he wasn't even going on the freeway. He was going to stay on the service road. He just didn't want me to get on the freeway without his permission. All at the same time, he's flipping me off. Now, I was carrying, and some people who are less responsible would fly off the handle and probably retaliate or whip out their gun or point it at the guy and do all that silly, stupid stuff that you really should never, ever even think about doing. Okay? Now, there was a small part of me that wanted to flip him back. I did not do that. All right? God would not be happy with me if I did that. I would not be happy with me if I did that. I just slowed down and I got behind him and I let him go and move over to the right. And then I got to his, I got behind him and around to his left. And even as I started entering the freeway, the guy rolls down his driver window and just keeps flipping me. Now, what did I do? I didn't do anything. All I wanted to do was get on the freeway. This guy was having a bad day, whatever. He wanted to take it out on me. Fine. I decided to de-escalate it. That's an example of responsibility. It could have turned really ugly. I don't know if he had a gun. I don't know if he'd have changed his mind and taken the next opportunity to get on the freeway, which there was another one, a little ways ahead, and try to run me down, run me off the road. Who knows what? Who knows what? That gun that I carry when I'm in my vehicle is only for last resorts when I have no other opportunity. So we need to keep a low profile and avoid those social conflicts. Avoid the name calling. Avoid the display of one thing I just talked about, the social finger. And if you're challenged by a testosterone-charged nutbag like I was, the best case, of course, of action is do what I did, back off. See, nothing good can come from continuing that kind of a conflict, and this is called sacrifice. It's called sacrifice. And it's a sacrifice that we make when we go armed, when we decide to carry a gun. The power of potential deadly force goes with us into every conflict like that or any others. And it's a sobering reminder we have to be responsible for our actions at all times. You got to leave your pent-up anger and your hypersensitivities and your resentments at home. And perhaps that old cliche should be rephrased as I mentioned earlier. A responsibly armed society is a polite society. Now, let's talk a little bit about more responsibility. And this is why where training really does matter. And this is why you really should get training, okay? Because of this responsibility that you bear as a private citizen. See, as a private citizen, you're limited. However, in real life, it's just not that simple. If another adult, physically attacks you, how can you be certain that he or she does not have a deadly weapon? How can you be certain that they don't intend to use it on you? You can't. So if you do value your life and limb, and I assume that you do because that's why you carry, you have to be prepared to escalate your level of force up to the continuum necessary to counter the bad guy's actions, to counter what the bad guy's doing to you. Here's the problem. As good guys and good gals, we have to react to the bad guy's actions. And most of the time, his action is faster. In other words, our reaction is slower than the bad guy's actions. Our reaction is slower. So we have to learn to make our reactions as fast. So when you carry a gun, that potential of deadly force, boy, then it really comes into play, doesn't it? And not only that, but can you deploy that deadly force? Can you get your gun into action and can you use it effectively and efficiently? Because you don't get to dictate the terms of the fight. The bad guy gets to dictate the terms of the fight. Now, let me shift gears just a little bit and kind of move on to the next segment of the responsibility discussion here that I wanted to have with you. So, quick break, and I'll shift gears into the next segment.
80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Dianne Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in two other homicides. These two items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, the next segment here is about who should probably not carry a gun. Now, I'm not saying that we should legally prevent people from carrying a gun, other than convicted felons. I'm 100% on board with the policy that convicted felons should not be able to purchase, own, and carry a firearm. That's not what I'm talking about. I think that there are some people that just don't have the level of responsibility, and they probably don't have any business making an attempt to carry a gun. I'll explain. This might be a little controversial, I understand, but give me the benefit of the doubt here. Let me explain. And then if you want to comment, I got a voicemail or I got emails and things like that that you can comment on, and I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the show. Now, as you know, I'm a very passionate gun rights advocate. I'm a huge Second Amendment supporter. I've had people criticize me saying that I do harm to the Second Amendment movement. Really? I do harm to the Second Amendment movement? Those are some of, I got one iTunes review like that. And by the way, speaking of iTunes, I have a lot of iTunes reviews. Thank you very much. Good and bad, mostly good. If you listen to this show on iTunes, if you don't mind, head over to iTunes, give me a review. Let me know what you think of my show. Try to listen to at least, you know, half a dozen podcasts before you give me an iTunes comment. Sometimes people listen to one and they hear one thing I say that they don't like, and boom, they blow up iTunes with all kinds of comments. But thank you very much for those of you who have given me iTunes reviews. Here's some examples of some people who probably, and again, I'm not saying that we should force them. Excuse me. I'm not saying that we should force them by law not to carry a gun. But these are probably people that don't really have the level of responsibility necessary. There are people whose personality or intellectual deficiencies lack the basic common sense to make it even possible for them to understand the grave responsibility that goes with being armed. Okay? Some of them get so confused at times that they can't even pay attention very long on how to safely operate a firearm. I've seen them before. Fortunately, they were not in my classes. I was at a public range one time. I was at a public range, and I felt sorry for one of the range safety officers because he was trying to show someone that didn't even have the attention span to learn how to properly and safely load the gun, chamber around. It was a 1911, so even the safety officer had to properly teach that person how to use thumb safety. But that person just didn't even have the attention span or the ability to pay attention. Probably not a very responsible person to be carrying a gun, do you think? We also have people that lack the judgment and the impulse control that would let them have some restraint when they got hot under the collar, like the example I used in the previous segment about the guy flipping me off just because he didn't want me to get in the left lane to enter the freeway. Some people don't have the judgment. They can't control their impulses. And if you don't have impulse control, I think you're a risk, not only to yourself, but others. Especially if you're carrying a loaded firearm with you. Okay, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but some people do have very serious attention deficit disorder. And they can turn into a danger. And some people don't even have the necessary intellectual capacity or patience or character to learn what they need to learn. Now, there are people who are very violent criminal actors, or they have big anger management issues. They may not be a convicted felon. They might not be a criminal, but they've got very serious anger management problems or very, very short fuses. You know some of them? I do. Kind of makes you wonder, huh? Should they be toting a gun around? Now, we obviously make lots of legal efforts to keep psychopaths and sociopaths and convicted criminals or violent criminals from owning guns. Unfortunately, even non-violent criminals that really don't have any problem, and they're very, very responsible people. It's just they made a very simple mistake in their past. Unfortunately, we prevent a lot of good people from owning guns with our system that we have, and that's a bad thing too. So this works the opposite too. Sometimes our laws are kind of jacked up, and they prevent the good guys from owning a gun because of something non-violent that they did in their past. But we do have people with very serious anger management issues and very, very short fuses. Maybe the guy that didn't want me to move over into his lane, that could think of nothing better to do than to speed up and not allow me over and flip me off the whole time. Maybe he's one of those guys with anger management issues and a real short fuse that should not have a gun on him. Who knows? He might have. He might have. Now, here's one that's kind of controversial, and it happened in my family years and years ago. But there are people who are clinically depressed, and they're at the risk of committing suicide. Or they're so mentally ill that they're the kind of people that we see committing these mass shootings, like the recent one at Fort Hood or the Navy Yard. Or the first one at Fort Hood, or the movie theater, Virginia Tech. The list goes on. These are all very clinically depressed, clinically psychotic, clinically mentally ill people. And it makes you wonder, maybe they shouldn't own guns. I don't know. That's a tough call, isn't it? It's a hard one. That's a very hard one. That's a very hard one because, you know, the right to self-defense is a basic human right. And I guess you could make the argument, well, whether someone's clinically depressed or clinically medically ill, they have a right to self-defense too, but yet they're the ones, because of their mental illness, that are committing all these horrific mass shootings. It's too bad they can't somehow be convinced to give up their firearms temporarily until their depression or their mental illness is under control and then get their firearms back. I don't know. That's a tough one. Think about that one. But this is all part of the responsibility. If you know someone who has serious mental issues like that, maybe as a family member you might want to intervene if you know that they possess and carry guns. Only temporarily, but that's a tough one. And again, please don't misquote me. I'm not saying that the government per se should get heavily involved in this, because this is that's a slippery slope when we all of a sudden give the government the right to start deciding who's mentally competent to carry a gun, because the government could just run away with that. I mean, you know, people like Harry Reid, who thinks that people that come to the aid of other people who want to stand up to the federal government, he thinks we're domestic terrorists. Well, who knows? You give a guy like Harry Reid or someone like that enough power, and he might decide, well, you know, gee, I think that anybody that carries a gun for self-defense is a mental kook and should not have one. So this is why we don't want to give pinhead politicians too much power and too much leeway to start deciding who's a mental kook and who's not. Now, I'm probably really going to upset some people with this next statement, but here's something that really falls into the category of who should not carry a gun. This comes out of Personal Defense Solutions, and I'll put a link in the show notes. Ignorant people. And ignorant people, that's not an excuse. Ignorance is not an excuse. Here's what I mean. There are people so smug or stupid or ignorant that they think it's okay to go buy a gun and not take any lessons on how to use it. There are many people who think they know everything they need to know about using a gun. All you got to do is just aim at your target and pull the trigger. Heck with all that complicated and boring stuff. They just don't want to have any part of it. It's just not for them. It's not necessary. And they are that smug, that stupid, and that ignorant to think that that's okay. Folks, carrying a gun is not a game. And if you're that kind of person, or if you know that kind of person that's that smug, that they think, oh, all I got to do is buy this and a whole bunch of ammo, and that's it. I don't need to have all that training stuff, and you know, I don't need to learn about all that responsibility. This is a bunch of BS that I even have to go sit for 4 hours and listen to some instructor talk to me about the, you know, use of deadly force and safe storage of handguns and blah, 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 blah. I don't need to know all that stuff. You know somebody like that? You might want to think about having this kind of responsibility discussion with them. I don't know. Maybe they won't even listen. But what do you think? You think they kind of fall into the category of someone that maybe shouldn't be carrying and toting a gun around? Think about it. Anyone who's not willing to put the time in to learn how to properly operate and maintain his or her firearm, or learn about the judicious use of force, including deadly force, and how to effectively conceal their gun, probably shouldn't carry it. And then we have another type called the hoplophobics, which I dedicated a whole show to this several weeks ago called hoplophobia. You can go back and listen to that if you haven't. It's an abnormal or irrational fear of weapons, like knives and guns. It's a true phobia. It's a true phobia. It really is. And some of them are so uncomfortable with guns that they're never going to go to the range and practice. But they think it's okay to own the gun. Okay? Now, we also have another type. People that are unwilling to take a human life in self-defense, even if it means getting raped or murdered. Now, these are people I can't understand. I just simply can't understand it. Their belief system makes it morally impossible for them to use self-defense. They'd rather have the state defend them, or the police, or people who can't get there for 15 to 20 minutes. They live under a dangerous illusion, and they cannot or will not carry a gun. Okay? They might own one, but they don't carry it. Now, here's some other people that shouldn't own guns, probably. Probably shouldn't own or shouldn't be carrying one around. And then I'll finish up with this. Kind of a short podcast, just kind of a short little essay that I wanted to share with you guys out there. But I've had people in one of my CHL classes do this. I've had people that would ask me questions in CHL class. And if some of you who are a CHL instructor, or in other states it's called CCW, if you're a CCW instructor and you've taught some classes, you've probably had people like this. They actually wanted to come to class to sort of get a permission to shoot someone. You know, it's like they were asking questions to try to get me to say, okay, you got permission to go shoot somebody. And I just simply wouldn't give it. It was almost like they were baiting me into saying it. All right? If you have to get a license in your state to carry a gun, it doesn't mean that you've been given permission now to go shoot somebody. You know, you see a lot of stories about people that fire at somebody because they're trying to steal a lawnmower out of their garage or whatever. Hey, come on, if someone wants your lawnmower, let them take your lawnmower. You know, you can always go get another lawnmower, right? But what if you had to pay $50,000 in legal fees and still get sentenced to 10 years in prison? Was that worth it? So, you know, think about it. That's pretty much what I wanted to say. Again, this is kind of a short podcast. Power versus responsibility. I wanted to get into this subject with you. Let me know what you think. If you want to call into my voicemail, you can do that at 210-646-1727. Love to get some voicemails from you. I promised that this week I would do some voicemails. I'm going to dedicate next week to that. I'm sorry I keep kicking that can down the road, but I don't like to mix topics as much as I can possibly help it. So let this sink in for a while. You might have things to add. Next week, I've got all kinds of cool voicemails. I've got 4 or 5 of them right now. This show may generate some more, so I may have some more to talk about next week. So it is going to be dedicated to you, the listener, next week. You, the listener, are going to have the stage on my show next week. Next week's going to be a voicemail podcast. Now, it's going to be late. Next week's show is probably not going to come out on Sundays, like I like to release it. Maybe it will, but maybe it won't. It might take a little while for me to kind of get it all put together. So it might not be till Monday or Tuesday. Please bear with me on that. Hey, don't forget about the Shooters Club. Ben Branham and I are going on May 10th to film a whole bunch more video. We're filming a bunch more video for the Shooters Club. So those of you who are members of the Shooters Club and you want to take advantage of the awesome giveaway, even a gun giveaway on June 30th, there's been a lot of you signing up lately. Thank you very much. $75 a year, you can watch our instructional videos, or $8 a month. I don't have paid sponsors on this show. So this is my way of keeping it commercial free. You can also support my show by making your purchases on my Amazon store whenever you're going to buy something from Amazon. I'm going to buy from myself pretty soon, get some new sites. And I'll be talking about some of those sites that I'm checking out pretty soon. Might even cover it in next week's voicemail podcast. The two classes that I'm going to be involved in teaching the rest of the year, June 7th and 8th, up in Arkansas with John Hideaway and Ben Branham. I'm going to be there for that class. Don't worry about that. I am going to be there. Quite a few signups. I think that class is going to sell out. It's half sold out now, folks. And we've got a month and a half to go. And it's half sold out. So I wouldn't procrastinate much longer. That's a $400 weekend you will not regret with Ben Branham and myself and John Hideaway. Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced with Glenn Tate up in the Seattle, specifically the Squim area. That's been sold out now for a few months. If you want to get on the waiting list, though, you can be on the waiting list. We actually had one cancellation, and the first person on the waiting list got that spot. There's an order to the waiting list, so you never know. Between now and August, we might have some more cancellations. If you want to be on the waiting list, send me an email to bob@handgunworld.com. Don't forget the website address, handgunworld.com, and my email, bob@handgunworld.com. I think that pretty much covers it, folks. Thanks again for listening to yet another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. My name is Bob Main. I'm your host. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop, and I really think that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when they're expecting a click, or a click when they're expecting a bang. Please shoot straight, please shoot safe, and I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.